Hello listeners, it's me, Cameron Wong, your friendly host of What's the Deal Show. Some of you might be wondering what happened to last week's episode. Episode 33, which was to look at the fix-up, died a bizarre audio death. Basically, we had a software glitch which made the audio fairly unlistenable. However, we're happy to announce that we've been able to restore the audio and we're releasing the episode now. Unfortunately, you'll probably notice that the audio levels are a little off and it sounds like Patrick is talking from far away, like he's in a well. So go ahead, give it a listen. If you find it listenable, enjoy. If you don't find it, you know, listenable, don't worry. Just skip ahead to episode 34 and pretend like this never happened. Thanks for listening and supporting the show, and we hope you enjoy our almost lost episode.
Easy to be.
Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that's fueled by you. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today is your friendly guest host, Justin Armstrong.
Bonjour.
And Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 33, and today we'll be looking at season 3, episode 16, The Fix-Up. And we're recording live from France.
Is that why you can hear the accordion music in the background?
Yes.
Wait, guys, do you hear that? Is that the Eiffel Tower?
Creates a low hissing noise at all times. Justin, why did you go with the French intro? Tell us a little bit about that.
Trying to create a persona for the show. I feel like my current persona is bland and uninspired, so I'm trying to add a little edge to it.
The is French the are edge. Very edgy.
Is the edge saying hello in French?
A little bit. Like, you can also, can you hear, like, the, how my facial hair is affecting my voice right now.
That sounds like the wind blowing through the reeds.
Yeah, it's like that.
How are you today?
Okay.
You want to expand on that at all? Or?
You mean très bien.
Excellent. I don't know. I'm good.
You know what's a great topic every time you're on the show? What'd you have for dinner tonight?
Dinner tonight I had... I had 6 eggs scrambled on 2 English muffins, extra crispy.
Now, is that the whole wheat English muffin?
Extra crispy.
Extra
crisp? Maybe, I'm not sure how it
is. Is extra crisp not available in whole wheat?
I don't know. It just says extra crisp on the package.
Is that a reduction in net protein on the extra crisp?
I don't know. But I don't know if I get much out of the extra crispness. I don't really know. I've never done a taste test. But on the... I feel like it's better because the package says so.
Did you have the shredded cheese on there today?
No, I feel like I've been like... I just seem to happen to have cheese when I use it. I haven't bought cheese for scrambled eggs quite yet, but maybe one day.
What do you mean by happen to have cheese? Because you are buying the cheese, right?
Not always. I feel like I came into some cheese recently and made use of that.
It was your inheritance.
A little bit. I had some cheese inheritance.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So what was the total calories of tonight's meal?
I mean, I didn't really calculate it, but on the fly, probably about 750 or 800 maybe.
That's wow. It? From 6 eggs?
Well, I had poutine for lunch, Kim.
An egg is only 750 calories. I mean, 75 calories.
700 calories an egg.
It's like an ostrich egg.
I'll put the sound effect in there.
The rim shot sound effect?
That's right. I'm sure it's part of the iTunes sound effect suite. Patrick, how are you today?
Good. Spring is in the air.
What does that mean?
Cherry blossoms, lilies, lilacs, daffodils, all flowers.
How do you feel about spring?
Love it. It's great. Energizing, lots of sun.
Doesn't it bother your allergies, your seasonal allergies?
Oh, I don't have any seasonal allergies. I just enjoy the sunshine.
What's that like?
It's great. I love it.
Must be nice.
Every season's a good season, but spring's the best season.
Well, I thought the expression was, every season's a good season, except for spring and summer and some of fall. Isn't that what people say?
I didn't know either of them were expressions.
It's very popular.
And any other news to report aside from Springs in the Air? What'd you do today?
Went to work.
Did you write some lines of code?
I did. Wrote some CoffeeScript code today.
It's nice.
It was all right.
Did you define a variable?
Certainly did.
Is coffee a function? Is CoffeeScript computer lingo, or am I missing the joke here?
It's a programming language.
Right. That was embarrassing. I thought you wrote everything in BASIC.
You're thinking of...
Print penis. Go to 10. I mean, that's a great program I just wrote.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw that on the Android store. It's going to be ad-supported, though. Two currencies. It's going to be something called dollars and another one called bucks. And to buy different words, you have to use the bucks.
Can you convert Bitcoin to bucks?
Yeah, and we accept Bitcoin.
Nice.
It's going to be awesome.
How are you doing today, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm all right. Talking about Bitcoin, talking about bucks.
BTC.
Mt. Gox. Justin, anything about Bitcoin to add?
What kind of computer do you need to mine Bitcoins?
You basically can't use a normal computer now. They're actually now at the point of building specialized hardware to mine Bitcoin.
So profitable.
Seems like a kind of a, not a waste of like human resources, because it kind of seems like you're building machines to do things for an imaginary currency to speculate on. I don't know, it feels...
It's a real currency.
Well, it's a thing. Could a desktop computer originally be able to mine Bitcoins? And it, so just over time, it gets more complicated to mine them?
Every 10 minutes.
Wow. How long do we have for more Bitcoins?
Well, what is the cap on Bitcoins? There is a cap on the total amount that can go into the market.
It's until like 2036, I think.
Yeah.
That's when there's no more Bitcoins.
What then, though?
Then that's it. Then I guess the idea is that it's like a limited resource and like...
Economy free fall.
But won't that mean like deflation of Bitcoin?
I think the idea is because you can sell off fractional Bitcoin. This is the most boring conversation.
No, it is not. Our listenership wants to know.
Because if you can't...
Fractional Bitcoin.
How would you like split the Bitcoin then? Like how are you going
to... It's like how you split a dollar.
Right, but that's not expanding the money supply. That's just that's making new denominations.
I don't know how it works.
So it's going to be fine. I'm sinking all my resources into Bitcoins.
It's definitely a waste of electricity. I don't think it makes any sense.
Yet, who here is the one that craves a Bitcoin?
I would love a Bitcoin.
Okay.
But now they're too expensive. I wanted one back when they were like a dollar.
I almost bought you one for your birthday when they cost about $12, and I thought it was too much.
It probably is. I don't think anyone really... I don't know how to buy a Bitcoin, so I don't know. They're like $90 now, so I'm definitely not going to buy one.
You know, Patrick got some Reese's Peanut Butter Cups tonight. You could have one if you want.
Nah.
All right, well, if you'd like a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, why don't you go over into... whatsthedealshow.com. That's where we keep the peanut butter cup jar, as well as all the show notes for today's episodes. Maybe a picture, I don't know. Was there one last week?
No, I was going to make one, but I could still make one, put it up there for the back catalog.
For the devotees.
I was going to make one, a movie poster for Star-Crossed Bros.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah.
But how would that be Seinfeld related?
It doesn't have to be. I could have Jerry Seinfeld and George in it. Star-Crossed Bros, boom.
Ooh. Nice.
Green-lighted.
So, in today's episode, The Fix-Up, Jerry and Elaine are both out with their friends, and each one of their friends is just the slightest bit miserable. Life isn't exactly like they'd like it to be. Why, you might ask? Because the void in their life is empty. No partner to see them through the rough seas. Jerry and Elaine see fit to hook up Cynthia and George. Meanwhile, Kramer gets a big bag of condoms.
That's pretty good
stuff. A whole gross, I think.
Yeah.
Which is oddly specific.
Patrick, why don't you take us into this episode?
Yeah, so we start out with her monologue. And for some reason, Jerry's talking to the conductor in the orchestra. very related to the rest of the episode. You would be surprised to know that Jerry is skeptical of the conductor's role in the orchestra.
Male conductors are like this.
Cameron, how much do you know about conductors and how they, like, direct the orchestra? Do you know a lot, or do you know about as much as Jerry?
Do you want to know what's funny? When I was a kid, on my sister's either soccer or softball team, one of her teammates' dad was an orchestra conductor. And when I found this out, I was blown away. And I just wanted to know more about it. Because it always seemed like a very exciting job.
Nice job.
And so I read up a lot about it. And if we could go back in time and ask little Cameron about it, he had so many details about it. I used to be in the car and I'd be like, Mom, look at this. And I'd be waving my hand and I was like, staccato, that's what this is. Faster, they gotta play faster. Now, I don't really remember. I mean, it is largely about indicating to the various parts of the orchestra if they're supposed to, like, increase their tempo, decrease their tempo, and, like, volume management. Yeah. And in many ways, it's just being a glorified metronome. But it is a difficult job.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not even really a metronome, because the idea is the director... It kind of uses the whole orchestra as his instrument in a way to get a little flowery there. But he, you know, he stretches out the time, he slows things down, he speeds them up and the volume and stuff to get a certain effect. Because he can, because when you're sitting in the pit, whatever they call it.
It's the pit.
You can't really hear exactly the whole orchestra as a whole. You can hear yourself and maybe the people around you. But the conductor can kind of hear it as one whole. So he can direct them... You know, their volume to a real emotional scene. They can pack a punch and whatnot. So it's a real involved thing. It's not just being a metronome. But, yeah. So.
And doesn't he do a lot of work before?
Like, yeah, he's like the coach. Yeah. It's like saying, like, the coach of an NFL team is just a guy who points and yells mostly. But I wasn't judging
you. Bugs Bunny was a conductor.
What's funny, though, that you asked that question is because in a later episode of Seinfeld, George is trying to come up with material for Jerry, and his suggestion is to make a joke about, I know a million theater joke. What's the deal with those guys down in the pit? And Jerry says they're musicians, and it's not a joke. But according to George, it's a funny observation. Did you ever, like, aspire to do any sort of, like, conducting, Justin?
No, I don't think so. It seemed like a lot of work because I never thought of it as just the conductor. I always thought of it as the leader of the orchestra. And having to, like, know about all those different instruments and know how to actually make it all sound good together, it seemed like too much work.
You were in band, though, right?
Yeah, for years.
Was it just, like, the school... Guys,
school bands, yeah, the school teacher.
Was the school teacher, like, did you ever have a different conductor?
No, most, when we went to festivals, sometimes there'd be a guest, you'd go to workshops, and the guy running the workshop might direct the band.
But did you feel a noticeable difference between the conductors?
Yeah, especially when they were better. You kind of felt like you were in strong hands. And when you get, like, on the rare occasion we had TOCs, and sometimes they would know about music, sometimes they wouldn't. But you'd always get a sense that they didn't really know what they were doing.
Kind of like when I subbed for dance class.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episode really kicks off where Jerry and George, they're out to dinner, and Jerry says later, George is in rare form, and says... to just give up on dating entirely. You know, he's complaining that dating is very difficult. He's desperate, basically.
Do you notice that the comment that Jerry makes while George is complaining about his nostrils getting bigger is a joke that they reuse later?
No, when did they reuse that?
Ronnie K, the prop comic in the Fire episode, asked Jerry if his nostrils are getting bigger.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
I don't really get that joke.
I just think it's Jerry indicating how little he cares about what George is saying.
Yeah. And, like, people's paranoia about their body. You guys aren't worried about your nostrils?
No, are you worried about your nostrils?
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like they're stretching out a little.
Really? I'm never worried they're stretching out. I'm worried that I'm developing, like, maybe an excess of nostril hair. That seems to be something people talk about.
I know for sure I'm developing an excess of nostril hair. Every once in a while, one emerges, and I have to pluck it out.
You pluck it?
Yeah. It's very painful.
I kind of like it. You pull it out, and it's like, boink. And then you sneeze.
No.
Why not? No. Have you tried it?
I've tried, but I don't think I've succeeded.
But the alternative is sticking scissors up your nose, so it just seems dangerous.
No, it's easy. Just
scissors. Snip, are you snip, really snip. Doing that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going like super in. Like, it's only when it starts.
It's like way up there.
That's the thing. Like, it's only like real cosmetic. You know, if it's protruding outside of my orifice, maybe I'll trim it. But once it's like trimmed back a little inside there, leave it alone. It's fine.
I know what I'm calling this week's episode.
Trimming back the orifice.
So at the same time, Elaine is out with her friend Cynthia at a restaurant, and Cynthia's friend largely seems to be in the same boat as George. You know, she's quite upset, you know, that all the good ones, all the good men are gone, and the mediocre ones are upset that they're not the good ones.
But she's not in the same situation, though, really. He's, like, the really desperate one, and she's kind of... Maybe she thinks she's, like, top-shelf material, and that she's kind of, in a way, lowering herself to George because he'll be so grateful. So, in a way, it's not really the same thing at all. It's just... There's still that power differential. They're not... Yeah.
It's funny. The way they were talking, I almost got the feeling that they felt like there was no ranking system for women... And then men were either, like, good, mediocre, or bad. And that all women were basically on some sort of equal footing.
Yeah, it's funny. George is talking about wanting to date any woman. You know, like, it would be any woman. Like, he's almost asking out the operator on the phone for a date.
That would be an amazing story, though. Could you imagine that if you got a date with the operator on the phone?
But what if, like, is the operator going to be local, or are they going to be somewhere else, like in Virginia?
It's an exotic relationship, Patrick. Love knows no bounds.
I think it's interesting George's personality as he's in this desperate state because he's both really desperate, so he will take anything he gets, but he's also like almost doesn't care. So he's almost too aggressive in the way he approaches it. So like honestly, just trying to like make small talk with the phone operator to like ask them out would come across, especially with George, as incredibly creepy and just off-putting in general. So it's a bad mix, and I can kind of understand why George is in a rut at this point, because it's like a feedback cycle. He's kind of like desperate, but then he just has nothing to lose, and now he acts a little like too much, and then it's bad.
There's also a really disgusting scene in this episode, or shot, where George is eating his plate of spaghetti.
It's an amazing cut, though.
Yeah, there's sauce all over his face, noodles are coming out of his mouth.
There's a great shot of the tomato sauce in his shirt. Yeah, I don't know what
it's
is
like
about
a splatter.
What is it about tomato sauce that makes it, he just looks so... I don't know. It's the worst food discoloration.
But how did he manage to get that splatter on there? Like, it looks like he kind of, like, had, like, the pasta in his mouth, and he kind of, like, whipped his mouth or, like,
yeah, like
his whole
the noodle
around.
Flicks. It flicks. Yeah.
But not this way. Not out into your shoulder.
Those noodles, they fly.
He takes a little bit of noodle into the tip of his mouth. He slurps it all in, and sauce is flying everywhere.
You guys really sound like you know what you're talking about on this.
You never slurped some spaghetti?
Not like that.
I'm a sloppy eater.
You never lived.
it's on my bucket list.
Yeah, so at the same time, so like George is a like messy eater. He's really going at his spaghetti. And Cynthia, we see she really is enjoying her meal. Like, she's actually like eating like a human eats at a meal while talking. Like, she's eating while she talks. She doesn't do the thing like where at the beginning of the shot, she takes a bite. Like a tiny bite, and then like has a normal conversation, and doesn't eat again. She's eating the whole time. But, you know, so I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. She's like eating like a normal person. But then we learn she's bulimic.
Is that a joke, though? Is that a funny joke?
That's the joke, yeah. Like, there's no like consequence to this. Like, she gets up to go throw up, and I'm just like, oh, well, I guess women these days, it's the 90s.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. And I wasn't sure initially if that was the implication. At first I wondered, like, is she sick because of talking about this? But as you continue to watch the episode, she just has an eating disorder and we're all supposed to laugh.
Do you think that eating disorders, maybe just like bulimia, wasn't taken very seriously in the early 90s? Like, people didn't think that people were really sick when they were bulimic, they thought they were just vain?
I could believe that.
Yeah, I don't think we had a very good sense of it until...
maybe the later 90s?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know if that's true or not. I'm sure somewhere someone could tell us that that is not true, but I just don't think that the public had a good understanding of what it was for quite a while.
I feel like a sitcom today wouldn't make as light a joke about bulimia.
It would be on Degrassi, and it would be dealt with very seriously.
Yeah, or like if we're on Curb Your Enthusiasm, it would be like that character's big moral failing, and it would be like a secret, and Larry would let it slip or something, and then that person would end up, you know, in rehab or something, and it would be like kind of a sad situation that that Larry would have to get out of. No?
No, it could be. Why not?
But, like, I don't think it would just be like a one-off joke, like, gonna go throw up.
Bow, 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 bow. Yeah.
All right.
I just want to quickly point out, I think the actress who plays Cynthia is really good the whole episode. She's very strong. You know, for a supporting character, she really holds her own.
Do you guys recognize her from another popular 90s sitcom?
No.
Janice from Friends.
Who's Janice?
That was Chandler's once girlfriend.
Oh.
I didn't really watch Friends.
I mean,
Was she good on Friends?
I don't really know, because I also didn't really watch Friends. I just read up about this.
Was it early season Friends?
No, she was even in the finale, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Good for her.
I feel like I've watched less than 10 episodes, so maybe I missed her.
Oh, we're going to start a Friends podcast after this one's over, so get ready.
So, the next scene... It's in Jerry's apartment. Jerry is there with Elaine, and, you know, they talk about their evening from the night before, and we discover that, maybe I'll just wait till camera comes up.
Do you want one, too?
I'm good.
You could have kept going.
Well, I was distracted.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. So the next scene, we're in the apartment, and Jerry and Elaine are talking about their night before, and, you know, they basically just recount the previous scene to each other, and then they have a moment where they realize they should set up Cynthia and George.
Cameron, did you ever deliver newspapers as a kid?
I never had my own paper route. I just once, I used to help other kids deliver them, and I was totally ripped off by the other kids. They gave me $1 to help deliver the newspapers.
That's pretty bad.
They should have done that every week.
I mean, they did it a lot.
That's a real racket. They could have gotten, like, a couple more Camerons and just done the whole route, and then pocketed the difference.
That's like Tom Sawyer.
I mean, in my mind, I didn't know, like... In my mind, they were making, like, $5, and so I was getting, like, a fifth of it.
Right.
I mean, I didn't do it by myself. Like, I just kind of go out with them, but...
Did you ever get ink on your hands from the newspapers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, when you don't deliver newspapers, you don't realize that when you get it that in the morning, whatever, that comes off your hands pretty thoroughly. Just thought I'd bring that up.
That's all I got. Why are you bringing this up?
Because in the scene at the beginning, Jerry's upset that he gets ink on his hands and that they should have wet naps.
Oh.
And I mean, it's a valid point.
To be honest, I totally forgot and this seemed like a total non sequitur.
It's relevant.
And another thing about delivering papers.
And on the newspaper, it says Plugged In Traveler on the front cover, which I thought was interesting. I think there was a picture of a computer, maybe.
Yeah, e-traveling.
Do you think that just means visiting a website of a town?
Well, you book a virtual hotel.
You have a QuickTime VR tour.
Yeah, there's a MIDI playing that simulates the road sounds. Also, strings.
Sounds great.
I love embedded MIDI.
We should make a meaty version of our theme song.
You're in charge.
So yeah, they decided to set them up and talk about, you know, there's a little bit of discussion about whether Cynthia is too good for George. And Jerry has a really hilarious comment. He says, "What's with the eyebrows?" Like, I don't know what this means. Like, her eyebrows don't really look affected, you know?
They're striking.
They are, but they're just her eyebrows. It's not, like, a big affectation. It's not like she has, like, pink hair or something. Like, I could understand someone who's maybe a bit of a scrub being like, "What's with the pink hair?" But they're just her eyebrows.
What do you say to that, I guess?
I didn't really notice her eyebrows. I remember when Jerry talked about it, and I was like, "Oh, I should pay attention to the eyebrows in the next scene," but never registered. So I'm looking right now.
I do like Elaine's comment that women would kill for her eyebrows.
I mean, she's got... They're kind of full-looking, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're just nice-looking eyebrows.
But, I mean, she's no Jennifer Connelly.
I do think eyebrows are an underrated asset. You know, when you have good eyebrows, you know, I'd kill for those eyebrows.
How do you feel about Jennifer Connelly's eyebrows?
Those are top eyebrows.
They're definitely full, you know. Maybe when she pairs them back a little bit, honestly, they're pretty good. They're solid.
I just love them. Great eyebrows.
I mean,
who cares about eyebrows?
Labyrinth, maybe Labyrinth era eyebrows are a little too much, you know. There's almost like they're encroaching together a little bit, even. But
too close to like a unibrow, as it were.
I mean, it's like hinting at it slightly. And another notable actress with interesting eyebrows. Have you ever seen the
Whoopi Goldberg
in The Man in the Iron Mask? For whatever reason. The girl who's in love with a soldier, but Leonardo DiCaprio decides to like seduce her, sort of. She has extremely bold eyebrows, which are just out of control. And that's always bothered me about that movie. I can't get out of my head. It's
so like you're like The Man in the Iron Mask. It's about a B+ movie, but those eyebrows.
They're C+ at best.
So we'll go ahead and put up a comparison, I guess, between these people here. I'm just looking for the name of the actress in Man with the Iron.
Like, ask anybody and you'll see. I swear. I swear.
What am I asking them?
I swear.
Are the eyebrows in Iron Mask
so outrageous? Christine?
Yeah. Okay. Judith Goodrich? Goodrich. You know, they look pretty pared back in that picture.
Maybe in the movie, though.
Yeah.
Well, I'll continue to search for some photographs. You know, we'll go back in time a little bit here on these, but
I guess we can move on from this.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty normal looking eyebrows to me.
They look they're bolder when she's younger.
What does bold mean?
Full.
Just a
it's
big
like
eyebrow.
It's like they're a font and they've just been bolded.
Sans serif.
So, While Jerry's a bit offended at Elaine suggesting that maybe Cynthia's too good for George, he says like one of maybe my favorite lines in Seinfeld, where he's trying to, you know, prove George's case that he's good enough. And he's like, you know, George is fast. He runs like the wind and he's strong. He can lift 100 pounds over his head without even knowing. And he can bait a hook. And it's funny, when he says he can bait a hook, Elaine looks kind of, like, wowed, and it's like, he can really do that?
I gotta say, I've always really liked Jerry's obsession with speed as some sort of pickup line. He uses it at a party as well. He's, like, talking to a woman, he's like, "You wouldn't know it from looking at me, but I'm very fast," or something like that. And I thought it was so great. And so one time, I met this girl at a party, and I was talking to her, and I decided, you know what? That's a really funny line. Who wouldn't like that line? I'm going to do it. So, you know, in Justin's parlance, in a very bold move, I leaned up on the railing or whatever is next to us, and I was like, you know, you wouldn't know it to look at me, but I'm really fast. And she looked at me, and said, "What?" And it was dead from there. It nothing happened.
Wait, had you already been talking to her, or this was your opening line?
I found out her name. I introduced myself, and then I gave her the line about being really fast.
That could have gone either way, to be honest.
So what happened after that? You just
she was not impressed and mildly irritated and was actively like scanning to talk to somebody else and eventually just left.
That's a doomsday scenario, to be honest.
Yeah, she sounds like a real dud. If someone had that line for me, I would love it.
I mean, I just thought it would be at least an interesting conversation piece.
Yeah, I feel like she should play along, you know, be like, "Oh, are you faster than the Flash?" Like, no.
That's just probably a little too much to hope for, but...
Well, you're meeting somebody new at a party.
Yeah,
come on.
Play along a little. You're like, "Oh, you're doing the 100 meter?" Something.
Maybe it wasn't meant to be.
I think we can go ahead and say it wasn't. still holding out hope that line's going to pay off.
Elaine is a little convinced by this, but I think the thing that really puts Elaine over the edge is the idea of sharing all the information about the dates with Jerry. Like, you know, they get full access to each other's intelligence on the dating situation. She looks really excited about this.
Yeah, I didn't think Elaine was such, like, a gossip, I guess, but the gossip is the only thing that really compels her to make this happen.
And what's more, this is gossip that they're entirely creating. Like, they're fixing them up, and then it's just like it's for their entertainment. And Jerry, you know, he knows it's not going to work out. I mean, it is George.
So when this scene ends and Jerry's like, "I'm going to do it." I don't know if you noticed this. I pointed out to Justin, because I don't think most people are paying attention to it. Jerry does the worst fake phone dialing in this scene of all time. He holds up the phone and he's just like rapidly and totally randomly looking like he's hitting buttons. He's just like, how many buttons would you say? Like, how many numbers is this phone number? Like 15?
Maybe he's dialing to, maybe George lives in Vietnam, maybe? Lots of extensions, or...
You know, I think...
Look at those eyebrows. Come on. All right, come on.
We're looking at Judith Godrech's eyebrows. I mean, they are full.
They're very full.
But, I mean, I think they look okay.
Oh, Patrick?
Patrick, weigh in on this. I think she looks very French.
She does. They are quite dark.
Are they bold, Patrick?
I don't think they're like upsetting or anything, but they are bolder than the average person. But you know, if she didn't have those, she would just look like a generic movie star. So I think it's a good
She definitely has pared them back since then.
Yeah. Well, she probably wants to look more like a generic movie
star. But I'm gonna go ahead and say right now, pretty attractive woman.
Yeah, I love them.
Eyebrows and all.
You know, one of the about Jerry's like phone thing, I think one of the things that people say is like an attribute of a good actor is that they consistently can do a scene over and over. Like, if they have to do like 20 takes, they can do a good job each time. I get the impression that Jerry Seinfeld can do 2 or 3 good takes and then he's just kind of tired with it. And I feel like this is just, like, they must have done this a lot, and he's just like, "I'm going to dial the phone in a funny way." And that was just the best take, so they had to use it. Okay. So, the next scene, we've got Jerry trying to convince George to go with Cynthia, and Elaine trying to convince Cynthia to go with George. Now, you wouldn't think it, based on the previous conversation where George is desperate for any woman, but George is a hard sell on this idea. The first suggestion, he's like furious. He says, you know, it's a step away from personal ads and prostitution.
But you know what I think it is? I think he's just embarrassed. I feel like he's sunk to a low where his friend is bailing him out, and he feels like he has to cover himself. He has to...
So you think he's feigning outrage?
A little bit. I feel like underneath it all, he's feigning it a little bit because he wants to be indignant of the idea of having to be fixed up. That's my theory.
Would either of you accept a fix-up in a scenario where you're single, obviously?
Sure.
Yeah,
why not? It'd be fun.
I mean, So I would never have met this person before?
Yeah, basically a blind date.
I would be more open to a fix-up with someone I would never met before than someone I'd, like sort of... You know that thing where you, like, do a stop and chat with someone?
Yeah,
and,
that's like, kind of weird.
Like, it's like, oh, and this is my friend Cynthia. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, okay, see you later. That would be weird. If I'd never met them before, I'd be more willing to do it.
I'm definitely more comfortable in, like, complete stranger scenarios. I always say this, like, I would way more likely... This might be going too far, but I would be way more likely to be, like, completely naked in front of a group of strangers as opposed to people I know. And it's just, like, the same thing. Almost the anonymity of strangers makes me more comfortable. So in, like, a dating scenario, complete random, that's great.
You'd be more willing to be naked in front of a stranger than someone you know.
Not in a sexual way, though. It just means, like,
on a new date.
Yeah, if I was going on a new date, it would definitely have to be with a stranger. That's my theory.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I really wanted to say something, but I didn't even know what to say after that. On my nude date.
That's a thing.
Nude another, backgammon. With a stranger or with someone you've met before?
Nude backgammon?
Yeah.
No, I do nude backgammon with someone I knew.
All right.
It's a friendly game.
Well, actually, it's not. Patrick?
It's the cruelest game. So George has a sentence. He says, it's one step away from personal ads and prostitutes. Then there's a beat. And George looks up and says, what does she look like? And George has the most specific and highest standards for a desperate man. You know, like, he's like, what about the body? You know, he doesn't want anyone smarter than him.
I like how out of the big list, the last thing that came up was, what's their personality like?
Well, you know, well, also flowing, cascading hair.
Well, that's the thing, but I felt like George kind of had, like, these big things, and at that point, he was just starting to, like, nitpick at every little thing, but it was like, what was it? The first one was, what does she look like?
Yeah.
Is she smarter than him? Mm-hmm. And then, what's her personality? Like, he wasn't concerned about that at all.
Yeah, you seem more concerned about the flowing, cascading hair.
It's very important to him.
Hair, whether he can get his hand out of it when he puts it in, than her personality.
And you know what? She basically meets his criteria. I mean, like, she's pretty attractive.
And he doesn't care about eyebrows, so...
Apparently not, yeah.
And so George is a bit of a harder sell for Elaine. You know, when she asks what does he look like, Elaine's got some trouble with this one. You know, she's got a lot of character in his face.
There's a good one. What is that, a violent scar right across his face, or what?
And then she's like, he's short, and, yeah, and... And she was like, you short and fat? And she was, he's so powerful.
Elaine describes him as stocky, and she kind of like does this thing like she's hugging a bear, and she's kind of smiling.
That's
he's
great.
He's so powerful, and she repeats the line about him being able to lift 100 pounds over his head.
I mean, this is the worst sell job she could possibly do.
It is really bad.
Yeah, it's a fantastic worst description of all time of anyone.
Yeah, to be honest, like a unemployed...
Like a troll.
Unemployed, short, stocky, bald man who poisoned his boss. And does not sound... It's a miracle Cynthia agrees to go.
And yet, it takes like 30 seconds for her to get convinced.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I mean, there's just no world where stocky is a good sell job. I also like that Elaine tells the story. She was in on the poisoning. And she does not include that part. She's happy to throw George down the...
She doesn't even explain it, no. There is like a subtle, men are like this, women are like that kind of thing. In a kind of a stereotypical way, the first thing George thinks about is the looks. And then, oh, I guess he finds out about personality later. But then she's all about what kind of job he has and how much money he makes. Oh, and then what looks. So it's like a real, like, stereotypical male-female priorities thing.
I really liked your stand-up voice there.
Yeah, it's true, but I don't know. I think the scene was pretty fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Great.
George's super high standards, I think, are the best part. No wonder he is single.
I wish we could see a George internet dating, though, because that was my thought by the end of this. I would love it. There's that scene in The Office in the UK edition where Ricky Gervais signs up all right, David Brent, I suppose, signs up to do internet dating, and Gareth is just holding up the like dating profiles, and he just looks at the picture, and he's like, pass. Well, we should have at least one person like this, and one like, well, just take at least one. And honestly, I would love to see George doing that. I can just imagine the picture that they'd pick for his like his profile picture on there.
It would be very like seductive.
George shirtless on a recliner.
Yeah.
Doesn't he drop the word mellifluous in the scene, or is that later?
That's after their first phone call.
Oh well, we'll bring that up later, I guess.
Yeah. So. I guess they agree to go on the date. We cut to the next scene, and George has had a phone conversation with her. I guess they agree to a phone conversation, I'm sorry. And so George is thrilled about this phone conversation. It went so well, he threw away his notes in the middle of the call.
It kind of just sounds like it was a successful phone conversation instead of a disaster.
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't have to rely on notes and that they managed to last 20 minutes.
Have you guys noticed that throughout Seinfeld, George's like thing with dating is so often like having just had a good phone conversation? Yeah. And like, you know, like, oh, I talked to her about sea otters or whatever, and she was fascinated. But like, he's just so happy with the phone call. If only he could just date someone only on the phone. And he talks about that, actually, about like how he wishes that when they went on the date, they just have two phones on the table. It kind of sounds like if you could just throw a pane of glass in there that George will be very happy in jail.
Yeah, he's so excited. Well, he even says, like, on the date, you know, they should just have two phones on the table. You know, they could talk.
Didn't I just say that?
Oh, wait, sorry.
That's awkward. Apparently booked, yeah.
So anyway, yeah, George is basically, you know, he's in love. He's giddy. You know, he's in love with her timbre, of her voice. But then Elaine comes in, and she's also excited, and the reason she's excited is because they're going on a date, and George is very upset that she did not mention the phone conversation. He's ready to give up at this point. He'll go on one date, but that's it. It's over.
I mean, I would be disappointed, I guess, if I thought it was that good, but I feel like George's standard is that she didn't hang up on him at this point. I mean, he threw away his notes. hang on, Justin, so... Part of the way that George describes the conversation is what? How does he describe her again?
Oh, mellifluous? Mellifluous. Yeah, it means smooth, rich flow, like a...
Oh, like a melody.
Yeah. That's a $5 word, if I ever heard one.
So could you put that into a sentence?
So she had a mellifluous voice as she spoke.
Sounds pretty good. I was trying to get the thing I did last. Oh, no, it didn't work. I really wanted it. I wanted the robot to speak. I'm all about robot these days, you know that.
Yeah, so...
Mellifluous.
So Kramer comes in, and he's excited. He just visited his friend Bob Sacramento, who, as Jerry mentions, gives us some new information, is from Jersey. He visited his friend at the condom factory, and his friend has given him a gross of condoms.
A whole gross.
I mean, it is gross.
So,
dad gross, humor.
That was bad.
A dozen dozens, right?
144.
So, yeah, everyone's kind of amazed by this. Kramer says that Elaine should take... I guess he's implying that she's as promiscuous as he is.
72 is a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. He just walks in there, dumps this giant sack of condoms on the table, is offering them around, and then when he turns to Elaine, he's like, Elaine, take half a bag! He's just so excited to offer her this opportunity.
Yeah, Kramer's really good in this episode, though I wasn't happy... that people hooted and hollered when Kramer came in. I was also upset when there was hooting and hollering when Jerry and Elaine were, like, trading barbs about, like, standards with each other. Like Elaine was like, your standard is too high, and Jerry's like, oh, were they? I dated you. Woo!
I always like the hooting and hollering.
I mean, he really zings her, though. I mean, like, that's well, hurtful.
But she zings him back, though.
Yeah, she has another one.
I'm aware, but, like, Jerry bombed her.
Yeah, that was...
out of nowhere. Yeah, so then we see George. He takes one. He's confident about this date.
I mean, he's not confident at all. It's, like, the saddest, like, taking of a condom.
I'll take one.
Yeah.
And I mean, the colors, I mean, just, the colored condoms, I don't know what's going on with that there. Have you ever bought a colored, like, condom or ever had colored condoms?
Never.
Patrick?
I don't think so.
Pretty strange. I can't imagine that that's going to get a favorable reaction.
Look, it's blue. Check it out.
Hang on, it glows in the dark, but you gotta hold it in the light for a little while.
Oh, see, it has these racing stripes. That's how you know it's fast.
That's what she said.
Yeah, and speaking of condoms, Jerry has some material about condoms.
It's pretty good.
Cut to a monologue. He talks about how... the problem with condoms is it's still embarrassing to buy them at the pharmacy. Are you guys embarrassed if you ever have to buy condoms?
Formulate that. I mean, just get it out there.
I guess so. It's been a while, so I'm not really... Yeah, I guess there's always a bit of shame, I think, for me at least. I don't know why.
I'm always trying to convince myself that I'm not ashamed, but I definitely am. And, like, when I'm putting them down next to my, like...
cucumber?
My comb.
Your comb?
I don't know, whatever else I'm buying at the drugstore, my vitamin C or something.
At least it's not just, like, a pack of gum.
Yeah, I'm always a little embarrassed, and, you know...
Monsters, Inc. DVD.
Yeah. Yeah, I always feel a little bit ashamed. I don't know why. Like, I shouldn't feel ashamed, but...
It's just because I don't think it's necessarily because it's sexual. I think it's just a very, like, you know, it's a personal item, right? It's like buying, you know, like, something.
I don't know that it's like buying anything else.
Embarrassing.
It's only other things that have to do with sex, like maybe buying like some sort of lubricant.
What about like the thing Kramer buys, like that thing when he's like when he's constipated, he buys that the dreaded apparatus,
the enema.
Yeah, that would be pretty embarrassing.
I mean, that wouldn't be great.
That'd be more embarrassing. I mean, there are a lot of things that
the intimate items you might have to buy are what's embarrassing. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad, Patrick, you talked about how you often try to convince yourself that you're not embarrassed buying condoms. Because there was a time where I bought condoms, and I was at, I don't know, Shoppers Drug Mart. I'm pretty sure that's where I was. And so I went back there, and of course, I was a young man at the time, and part of the consideration with condoms is that they're not cheap. A condom can be expensive. And so I went back there and I was looking at them, and there I saw what I was looking for. The sale tag with the condoms, and the box of condoms that was on sale was enormous. It was so big. Like you can get the little modest pack. You know, you go up front, you just buy like the little three pack, you know, like, okay, you know, yeah, I'm having sex, but it's not more than three times, okay? It's fine. I'll just buy these. It'll be fine. But, you know, if you're buying the pack that's like 30 or whatever, you better have some strong mojo when you go up there. So, and to make it worse, it wasn't just like, you know, like...
an erection as you're walking up to the counter. I can't control this thing.
It wasn't just like a standard box of condoms, you know? It wasn't just like your lifestyle's plain... extra comfort. It wasn't even like something, you know, just a little devious, a little deviant. It wasn't just like ribbed or anything like that. No, it was, and I remember this today, it was called Tropical Sensations. And not only were they colored, but they were also flavored. And so I take this box off and I'm walking up front, and there's this dreaded, you know, I'm, like, really nervous. I've got this huge box of condoms. I look like a sexual deviant. They're colored. They're flavored. What am I going to do? And I'm like, you know what? No, I'm just going to go up front, and I'm just going to buy these like I'm buying anything else. It's nobody else's business. It's fine, okay? So I walk up there, and to really help me, there's nobody at the till. There's just, like, the person doing it. There's no lines or anything. And so I, like, walk up there, and I, like, put it down on the counter with great confidence. And, you know, she scans it in. And I imagine I'm just looking back at myself and, like, giving her, like, a sigh. Like, yeah, I am buying this huge box of condoms. And she asked me, like, do you have an Optimum Points Club thing or whatever? And I was so full of confidence. And I was like, you know what? No, I don't. And she's like, would you like to sign up? I was like, yes, I would like to sign up. So she hands me the application form.
I'm gonna be buying a lot of condoms.
And the application form of that thing was huge. I felt like I was reading like a plea bargain, like I was going, like I was a lawyer or something. And of course, as soon as this happened, a huge lineup started to form behind me. And I started getting nervous, and my hand was shaking as I was trying to fill out this thing. And eventually I got it. And, you know, she's like, you got like 20 points today or whatever. Like, do you want a bag for that? And of course, they're out of the little bags. So she put in like the huge bag, like I bought a vacuum cleaner or something. Oh, man. So now I just go in with full shame every time and just make the purchases as fast as possible.
Your hubris got the best of you.
It really did. I thought I was going to...
This is where self-checkouts would shine. No shame at all.
That's true. Except for the little condom light that turns on. We got a condom on the self-checkout, everybody. Condoms here.
Price check on pervert.
Oh my.
So yeah, anyway. Jerry has a pretty good signal. Just like a shamed nodding, like a stern, like wide-eyed nodding.
I probably laughed at this joke probably more than anything in the episode. At least for a while, yeah.
But it was an amazing idea. If I was a teenage boy and I wanted to buy condoms, which I wouldn't, I would just go to like the health clinic and get them for mm-hmm. free is probably the good idea. But, you know, as a teenage boy, that seems like the best idea ever. You just kind of like, you know, just like scratch your ear. It's like, will that be all, sir? Yes, that's it. And you just kind of rub your earlobe. Problem solved. Just, it's a pact.
Your gum is $23.94. All right. So, after the date, George and, Elaine and Jerry are on the phone talking about how the date's been going on so long, and then I guess they get, what's it called? Call waiting?
Call waiting, yeah. Wait,
second call. They each have George and Cynthia on the line, and we learn that George and Cynthia had sex on their date.
Woo!
And they love George. George looks kind of ashamed. In the scene. Did you guys notice that?
I mean, I noticed that he was in his bathrobe, like Hugh Hefner, underneath of his DC Superheroes poster, but aside from that...
Do you think George wanted to have sex because he has, like, a comic book-themed bedspread and, like, a DC, like, spread, like, splash on the wall behind his bed?
I don't know what it is, but I'm not sure in what world the kitchen is the best room.
It's the most social room in the house.
That's really strange.
I don't know why she didn't just say no. You know, like, maybe this is a bad idea.
But they both seem like they're both kind of like, almost like regretful.
Yeah, they both have low self-esteem.
Too. But why would they both agree to this, then?
I don't know. It's a bad idea.
Head on a hot plate.
Yeah.
I can barely picture this scenario.
It sounds terrible.
I'm trying to imagine why George had a hot plate. Does his apartment not even have a stove?
It might not. He's unemployed.
Well, he's going on trips to the Cayman Islands.
That was a discount trip. Anyway, so they get off the phone, and for some reason, I don't really understand why, Elaine and Jerry decide not to divulge the information. Maybe because, like, things have not gone well, and, like, they're on their team's side, you know?
Yeah, things are coming home to roost, you know? They were having fun and games matching them up, but now they feel a little guilty because it actually has real-world consequences.
So, does George ever tell Jerry that he had sex in the kitchen?
No, he does not.
So Jerry never knows. Is Elaine the only person that ever knows this?
Well,
aside from Cynthia and George.
Yeah, I think so. Huh. The whole thing is odd, and actually it seems weird because this is almost seemingly like the juicy information that they wanted to share in the first place.
Yeah,
like,
it seems
oh
like
man, Elaine like they had sex, but...
Yeah, Elaine should be thrilled to share this with Jerry.
Not so.
Growing a conscience.
Nice.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Also, Elaine is painting her apartment, which I thought was kind of an interesting detail. Like, earlier, everything was covered up. This scene, she's painting. And then later, it's all finished, and her apartment's pink. I thought this was funny, because it does not advance the story at all, but as a detail they decided to include. I don't know, I kind of liked it. It was pretty good.
Yeah. I guess otherwise, Elaine just would have been sitting around her apartment both times, maybe?
She could have just been watching the TV or something.
I think the visual image of her in her painting overalls or whatever she was wearing and, like, the paint everywhere, I thought that was very funny. So I think that's why they wanted it, but
okay.
I liked it a lot.
So later, George is in Jerry's apartment. George is very upset. Very upset. Cynthia won't call him. George says he feels used. Jerry's indignant, and George says he has no idea what happened. She won't call him.
Doesn't he, though?
He definitely... I mean, does he not have the self-awareness that having sex in the kitchen is a weird thing? I guess not, since he insisted on it. George and Jerry are kind of fighting about this whole situation, and then Kramer comes in and breaks up the fight. And I think this is some really good acting from Michael Richards. Kramer's kind of acting like a father figure, and is confused about what the issue is. You know, he says, this is exactly what they want you to do. It's about a woman, isn't it?
I like how he refers to women as manipulators.
Yeah. And then he says, like, if you want to fight with someone, you fight with me!
It is pretty good, and he's so... he's so forceful in this scene. There's something about the way that in this scene he literally does like insert himself between characters. But whenever Michael Richards or Kramer is in a scene and he kind of like gets in between people or things, whether it's like fights, agreements, conversations, there's something kind of great about the way Kramer is as he kind of like interjects into things, I guess. I think that's like when he's at his best often.
Yeah, I kind of like, I just really like Kramer being outraged about someone's behavior. Like, that happens pretty often in the show. Pretty good. You know, after this little fight, Kramer just lets it slide that George doesn't want to use those condoms.
I love the implication here that Kramer thought that George was taking a pity condom.
Yeah.
That taking the condom was just for show. Which, I mean, if it was just for show, he should have taken half a bag.
I mean, he's no Cameron. Should have gotten 30 or whatever.
Yeah, tropical sensations.
George looks a little concerned about this. Then we cut to Elaine's apartment, and Cynthia shows up at the door.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah. Then we cut back to the apartment, Jerry's apartment, and Elaine and Jerry kind of have a fight between George and Cynthia by proxy. Like, they're both kind of upset with each other, but it's kind of for what George has done and what Cynthia has done. Like, Jerry's upset that Cynthia hasn't called. Elaine is upset because...
George had sex with Cynthia.
Yeah, and used that cheap condom and got her pregnant.
I mean, to be fair, he thought he was using... He did use a condom.
Yeah, but he took it from Kramer. You know, Elaine knew better than to take these Kramer condoms.
But I mean, I feel like Jerry and Elaine are somewhat complicit in this. They set up this date. They were there when George took that single condom. What did they think was going to happen? Especially when they found out they had sex.
Yeah.
How did Elaine not put this together already?
The argument's getting more and more heated. Jerry calls Cynthia bitter and twisted, and they disagree about whether she's bitter. And then, you know, it gets more and more heated. Grandma comes in. The father breaks up another fight.
Yeah, it's just funny that he doesn't... Both times he just completely misinterprets the situation.
Don't you two see that you're in love with each other?
I really like that line a lot for whatever reason.
Why can't you admit that?
I wish that he had tried to, like, convince them to, like, kiss or something. The way he gets Jerry and George to shake hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. And then Elaine, you know, she kind of mentions that Cynthia, or, like, she kind of shouts out that Cynthia's Mr. Beard. Meanwhile, George has walked in. First he looks shocked, but then George is thrilled. He's thrilled. Thrilled about his boys. They can do it.
They can swim.
That's a weird, it's a weird reaction.
Maybe he's got a father instinct, you know? He's excited to be a father.
It's still really weird.
I'm not gonna lie, the reaction doesn't seem right at all. Why would an unemployed man with nothing be so happy that this just happened?
He thought he would never reproduce.
But was that ever his goal? He's never indicated that his goal is to have a child.
Well, maybe later. Well, later he does. He talks about Seven and whatnot.
Seven!
Soda!
Soda's a great name.
Wait, it was Seven, right? Seven and Soda, right? Yeah.
Seven, it's Mickey Mantle's number.
Right.
It's a living tribute.
Yeah, he's thrilled. He runs out of there. And I guess, you know, he runs straight to the Cynthia's house. At the scene cuts, and we're at the restaurant. Cynthia tells the story about how she was in her apartment. George knocked on the door. And George, you know, said he was going to be supportive. She could do whatever she wanted, you know. If she wanted him to support her, he would support her, blah, blah, blah. You do everything. She was so impressed. They got back together. She loved it. You know, she had her period, so she wasn't actually pregnant. But, you know, she was so impressed. You know, give him another chance.
It seems really weirdly responsible for George.
It does, but, you know, he's got that parent instinct.
Yeah, I can't see George ever doing that.
And then he blows it.
Well, I mean, his food arrives and he eats like a starved bear.
Why would he eat this way?
I don't know, he's hungry, I guess.
But we've seen him eat in other situations. Like, he knows how to eat properly.
But in this episode, both times, he eats like a horse with his head in a feed bag. It's
yeah, it's funny. It's like in that first scene, they're like, let's establish that George eats, you know, like a slob. And then that can be his ultimate undoing. But it,
bow,
it,
bow, 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 bow.
It doesn't really come up again later.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, there are times where George is, like, intentionally eating like a monster. But in this, there's no reason for whatever's happening in this scene. I almost feel kind of bad because it seems like a good thing, and then George just absolutely destroys it.
Yeah. I mean, he shouldn't eat like that. And then the final scene is the monologue. And Jerry's just on about the idea of the setup. And it's a really weird joke. He says the first setup was how God set up Adam and Eve. Which is really weird, and I did not find very funny.
The ultimate hookup.
You know, he's like, you know, she used to date the snake, but now, you know, I think that's over. It's, I don't know, not worth talking about.
Easy to beat.
Yeah, it's just, there's not much to say about that joke, really. Alright, Nick.
Alright, so, Justin, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, you know what? I think it's probably, up to this point, almost certainly one of the strongest episodes of the season. The humor was really good, honestly. It didn't have some of the questionable humor choices. You know, they had the little bulimia thing, but other than that, it was a really strong episode. I laughed pretty good. It was good.
I liked how there are no, I mean, aside from the bulimia joke, there were no strongly upsetting moments, like the episode about suicide or
alcoholism.
Alcoholic, you know. For the most part, the episode was just about their dating mishaps. You know, pretty lightweight. We see some good Michael Richards Kramer acting. I thought it was good.
Yeah, generally I agree as well. Pretty funny episode. I know I've mentioned a couple times, but I agree with Patrick there. Michael Richards is really rounding into form. Kramer is Kramer. Just overall a pretty strong episode.
And you know what? It might be, correct me if I'm wrong, but there aren't a lot of really George-centric episodes in that George is like the only plot line in this whole story, right? There's, all the other ones are peripheral to it.
Well, in Paints Our Apartment.
They kind of hover, it's all hovering around this George story. And there aren't a lot of episodes like that. There are George storylines, but not so much George completely centric episodes, which I think is interesting.
I don't know. Like, there's the episode where George,
gets a job at Play Now.
Yeah, and he, or like later at Play Now, like when he's in the photo, right, and has to get it.
But there are other
Kruger Industrial. There's still lots. That one.
There's still other storylines in that one, though. Like, they're all intertwined. It's,
yeah, that's true. It's, there is really no other storyline here. It's all about George.
And I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good idea to do that a lot, but it's a rare instance of it, and it worked.
Yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's move on. Do other business. We're trying to jazz up that intro for you. What should I put in there? Do you actually think a song would be appropriate?
I think you should use a bit from a different part of the theme song.
Yeah, that'd be good.
You could use the little intro part.
Of our theme song?
Yeah.
The like... Yeah, maybe I'll just use that. I'll just cut that and move it back to the beginning of this segment.
I'll just record anyway.
Just take a track off Patrick's Scat album.
I'm a scat man.
It's called Scatting Business. Well, yeah. We have a double dose of other business for you today, and if you want to check it out, you can head over to whatsthedealshow.com where you can see all the show notes from today's episode, back episodes, and you can also check out today's two very private underwear-themed news stories. Last week, somehow robotic butt became the main topic. This week, we're going to start off by talking about something called Fundaware, and the company based out of Sydney, that's Sydney, Australia, not to be confused with Sydney, British Columbia. The tech firm's called Snepo, and they've built something called Fundaware. That's one word. And Fundaware are sexy, romantic underwear for couples, which can be remotely controlled by a mobile phone app, which allows you to stimulate and touch the person on the other side. So fundamentally, they say that the project's about transferring touch over vast distances, you know, like a global distance. And apparently, everyone who's tried them on has said how comfortable they are, how good they feel in them, and that they are an attractive piece of technology. So I know, Justin, you said last week they were calling technology sexy. Here it is. It's happening right now.
I guess it's literally sexy.
So you can't buy them. They're being marketed by Durex. And right now it's open for volunteers. You can check out their Facebook page and try and sign up. Justin, are you going to be on this list?
Ask Patrick first. I don't know his opinion first.
Patrick, are you going to be on the list? How do you feel about Fundaware? Is it just another fad? Is this the Bitcoin of underwear?
Well, I think it's definitely a fad.
Okay.
So what is the like main use case of this? Is it for like long distance relationships?
I'm not sure.
Your partner or whatever is
they call it
work or something, and you're just like, oh, I know. Let's spice up this
this 12 o'clock meeting.
Spice up this quarterly meeting, you know. Spice up this lunch meeting, you know.
So specifically, they've built it as long distance lovers.
Okay.
But I mean, I guess if you want to play mind games with your partner while they're at work, I guess it could also serve that function.
The secretary situation. I don't know.
Because I feel like I've honestly, like, heard about this sort of technology since about, like, the late 90s.
Yeah, like Wired magazines from 1997.
That's right. the romance issue.
I mean, maybe if it was like I was in a long distance relationship and my lady friend was interested, I would give it a try. But I mean, I feel like there's no real point. Like, I've got my iPhone or whatever, and then I'm just like,
that's enough pleasure for one man.
No, I just touch it, and then it's like why even have that step? You know, she could just have her own toy and do it herself.
Yeah. Look out, ladies. Do it yourself.
I just feel like this isn't adding that much to the equation. Maybe it's great. I would try it, maybe. But I don't know.
So you are...
I'm open-minded.
You're kind of like...
If I were in a long-distance relationship...
You'd be willing to give it a go. If Snappo...
was interested... Snappo thought we were a good candidate.
Well, Snappo has asked you, you would need to broach it with them. Would you bring it up with somebody else? Would you bring it up with your partner or not?
If I was in a long-distance relationship? Sure, bring it up. Try it.
Now, if you had to buy this at the counter at the pharmacy...
Well, I mean, I'd probably be buying it at a future shop. You'd really want me to throw in a Blu-ray player. yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine buying it at a store.
All right. Justin, Patrick has spoken.
Would I use this, you know...
Because it's not just for her. It's also for him. It's a couple's thing. So it's not the man has the phone. You both have your own apps, and you both have your own fundawares.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know if that would be actually fundaware, but...
Oh, man.
But would you be willing to give it a try?
I give it a shot, yeah. I mean...
It's not supporting Android.
You're funny. Oh, wow, that was... Yeah, I can see... It's not like... It's not one of those ideas that... I'm going to go on a limb and say it's not a bad idea.
It'd be a true Google Play Store.
Ooh.
I just activated Patrick's Fundaware.
Okay, Cameron, what about you? Would you try
whatever? Wait, just for a second. For whatever reason, this seems like less gross than like a fleshlight or something. I don't know why, but
well, because there's another person involved.
But like a remote controlled fleshlight or whatever that would be, it seems way grosser than whatever this is.
I love other business. I'm glad that we've devolved to hypothesizing on a remote-controlled fleshlight.
Cameron, would you try out the Thunderbird?
Well, hang on. Did we reach the zenith of where you were going with this?
I thought it was an okay idea for a product. And I might try it.
Okay.
Cameron?
It's an idea for a product in as much I think that you could probably sell this. But in my mind, it's a bad product. I feel like, number one, if you're going with Patrick's idea that you're just like, you know, the office pervert, I think at some point you're walking around and just all of a sudden it's like,
but how do they know it's not your phone?
No one's phone's vibrating like that. I'll tell you that much.
Custom vibrate, you know, you can set your own vibrate tone.
Vibrate tone?
Well, whatever it's called, vibrate pattern on your phone.
Yeah, Patrick. Pattern. Anyhow, I don't know. Would I give this a go? You know what? I guess I would give it a go. If Snappo was like, here you go. Here's a pair of underwear. Two pairs.
Yeah.
Give it a go. Let us know what you think. Yeah, I guess I'd be willing to try. But in my mind, it would bring me about as much joy as if I had like my phone in my pants and it just started ringing.
It does seem like it would not be very effective, but...
I mean, how heavy are these underwear? Like, if it's really effective, how big are these, like, vibration motors or whatever? Vibrating and pulsating actuators. Or pleasure notes, as some might call them.
Pleasure notes?
Yeah, I don't know.
Overall, pretty strange idea, as Patrick mentioned, you know, if you go back to 1997 Wired, I think some, like, company that sells adult videos was, like, trying to market the idea of, like, a full-body suit that you wore. It was, like a wetsuit, and it had, like, all sorts of motors and whatever all over it.
Yeah, and the motors would be synced with, like, a video.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of horrifying, actually.
It does. It sounds, like...
Vivid. I think that's the name of the company. Does that sound right, Patrick? Vivid? Remember. I think they were called something like that. I was trying to think of something with a V.
Vagina.
I don't think that was the name of the company.
Yeah, well, I guess it sounds like we're all kind of on board.
You said Durex?
What's the deal?
So,
a sex-positive podcast.
Durex is the company that's working with them, but they're not sure if they're going to actually make them widely available.
Oh.
So at current, if you want, if you're interested in trying up, you'll see all of us signed up, I guess. You have to head up to the Fundawear Facebook page, and they're looking for couples to volunteer to become involved with further trials. Mm-hmm. All right. So the second piece of other business, also underwear-based, if you guys want to check it out, it's on Glassboard. I guess Justin cannot, but Patrick can. So it's for a company called, and Justin, you'll appreciate this, Mystère. So that's French for mysterious man, you know, the international man of mystery. So if you head over to their website, Mystère has made a big splash because they're entering into the market right now with a brand new lingerie line focused on men.
Mm.
And
oh, wow.
if you head over to their webpage, you will see a picture of a pillow fight involving a man and a woman. And the man is wearing a Mystère's lingerie line. And so it's billed as lingerie and sexy underwear for men. And they have a wide array of products. They sell various types of underwear, bras, lingerie, stockings, and hosiery. And they also have a YouTube channel, if you want to check that out. But they sell all sorts of things, and they're all cut, I guess, to, like, fit a man. And so here's their spiel. They say, Mystère, understand that you want quality lingerie-style underwear made with care, attention to detail, and fits to your body perfectly. Comfortable men's panties that really do fit, bra straps that don't fall off your shoulder, teddies that don't ride up halfway through the night, and quality soft fabrics that make you feel great, that feel great for all-day wear. So, you know, they got Twitter, they're on Pinterest, they got YouTube. Is it going viral?
Wait, sorry, I just have to go to the
question. All right, it's the perfect time to stop.
I don't like that picture at all.
They're just having fun. I like how as soon as he's wearing lingerie that they have to have a pillow fight. We're just two ladies now. Did you look at their products?
Mm-hmm.
Did you look at the underwear?
No, I looked at all products.
Well, that's all right. Wait until you see their C-string underwear. Oh, it's for mobile. Here, let me just... Let me show this to you.
Well, if it's mobile, you better not be able to zoom in.
Just go ahead, go to larger/more photos for you here.
It's a lot easier than zooming in. Apparently it's really...
We're crashing the server. How high res is this picture going to be?
So it's like a sock?
I guess. I don't know what that's... That's the C-string underwear.
Mm-hmm.
So... Patrick, I don't think there could have been a much better... I like how it says right here, you'll probably not want to wear one under your clothing for a day.
Okay, so I have a question. Is this like fashion meant for... a typical straight man, and it's trying to like broaden like the fashion horizons, push it a little bit? Or is this just a way of marketing to people who like to dress in women's clothing but make it cut a little more comfortable for them?
I'm not sure because the marketing materials, like you saw the homepage, yeah. it's a pretty masculine looking guy on there. There's no sort of like, and there's nothing in the language of their marketing material on their webpage that seems to be like that they're catering specifically to that. I think they're taking all comers. Hmm. You know, if you're someone that's been looking for this product and you know that's something that is you know, something you've been looking for, then of course it's for them. But maybe they're also thinking like there's room in the market for men to have like more like flashier underwear, you know, like fancy underwear.
Like a C-string.
Like a C-string, Patrick. Patrick, what's your first thoughts?
I don't know. I don't understand it, I guess. Oh, you know, actually, in the frequently asked questions, there is a question that says that it seems tailored just for me. I'm just browsing your store, and I do not understand why men would want to wear lingerie.
Oh, okay.
The answer is, it's fun, it feels great, and it makes choosing underwear each day a little more enjoyable.
Hmm.
That still doesn't really answer my question, but I imagine they're deliberately ambiguous to allow as many... many entrants as possible.
Well, another question from their frequently asked questions is that they say that they should cater to gay customers as well, and they say that we provide lingerie for guys. They're not concerned about people's like sexual orientations, anything like that, whether they're vegetarian, Republican, Anglican, Martian, or any other persuasion. We just design and manufacture attractive luxury underwear for men.
Hmm.
I don't think this is for me. I have never really like felt that I needed a more luxurious underpant. You know, like I just
silk wear, boxers.
I just wear like Fruit of the Loom like boxer briefs. That's my underwear of choice.
I mean, so do I. It's a great underwear.
It is. It's a top underwear.
Do you get the one where they like put the fabric over the elastic?
No, that one's.
I like that one. That's the one for me.
But so I just don't I just don't have any, this is not appealing to me at all. But I guess it's nice that it's out there. It must be very difficult for men who want to wear this stuff and to find stuff that fits. It's like when skinny jeans, there were no skinny jeans for men, and so men would have to wear a women's pant if they wanted a skinnier pant.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, though, I feel like this isn't pushing like any kind of mainstream male style into a more, I don't know, feminine direction and try and broaden their underwear horizons. It just kind of feels like they took female style lingerie and just cut it for men.
Yeah.
Wait, so it just doesn't. So I don't know. It doesn't. It doesn't seem very mainstream, is all
well,
I'm saying.
Well, there's also a thing called a C-cup in here, which...
Well, a C-cup is the cup measurement for a bra.
Oh, well, C-string, sorry. Which is basically a sock that you put over your penis.
Well, the C-string is actually a cut of underwear for men and for women.
Oh.
I guess it's for men now as well, thanks to Mister. So it is a complete... It's like a thong... But there's no string that runs around, like, the hips. It's just kind of, like, it's got, like, I guess, wire in it. And so it just kind of, like, folds in and holds itself to your body. So it's for the most complete elimination of any sort of line of your underwear possible.
Hmm.
It has not caught on.
How do you feel about this, Cameron?
I mean... I feel like I think it's interesting the way they're marketing it, but I just don't know that, I just don't know that it's ready to break through. You know, it's, very famously, makeup companies have been trying for a very long time to try and, find ways to market basically like makeup to men. And so like cover up, I guess, would be like ones where I guess, you know, like everyone gets acne or whatever, everyone gets it. But they've struggled for a long time. And recently, some of these companies have just started making like very, very like the most basic products that they sell and start packaging them. They're like for men. And they talk about like how being a man is like really hard and you gotta oil your beard. And so that's kind of started to work. But, you know, if you think about how long that took, I feel like these guys might be a little too ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I think the, like, men wearing makeup is making, like, a tiny bit of inroads. I go to, like, yoga once in a while. It's in the change room. Saw a dude put on some cover-up. It was, like, an early morning class he put some on.
What?
He put on some, like, cover-up. After the class?
I think I misheard part of your story. I didn't hear there was another person in the story.
So, I went to a yoga class, right?
Yeah.
And in the change room, after the class, I saw a dude put on some cover-up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, it's making a little bit of inroads, I guess. So maybe, you know, there are dudes who... Because you always hear about that. Like, it seems... Like, in sitcoms, it seems to be, like, a shame thing, like... I just like wearing women's underwear. It's comfortable. So it seems like there must be some small subculture of people who are into this. And so, like, maybe it'll be enough to support this company. I don't see it becoming a big trend, though. Even, like, a tiny trend.
Too far ahead of the curve. Yeah. All right, well, there we go. So that was it. Those were our two underwear-related other business topics. So you can check out Fun to Wear on Facebook and UmMistare at UmMistare. com. Good job this week, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah. Justin, how do you feel being on the show so much recently?
It's all right, I guess. I guess I don't mind doing it. You know, I guess I reluctantly participate. I do miss Chris Young, though. I do like his shenanigans.
We all do.
He is. I mean, what would he have said about today's episode? Like when that woman in the purple dress came by with George, he'd have some words about that.
It'd be some very outrageous things.
I mean, it's made editing a lot easier. you know what? Chris Young, as always, would, I'm sure, love to be here. He's still working hard away on his film, and you can check out any sort of updates on their Indiegogo page. You know, maybe you'd like to make a contribution. You know, because you've been desperate to give us some money. Maybe this is a way to spend some cash. So if you go to Indiegogo and search for Focus, you can find out about his ongoing film project. And Chris Young will be back amongst us soon. Next week, we'll be looking at the first two-parter episode of Seinfeld. We'll be looking at what is known now as The Boyfriend and what was originally known as The New Friend and then... The Boyfriend, I think. The episode naming has changed. So it is episodes 34, 35, and Jerry becomes friends with Keith Hernandez, who is playing himself, a Major League Baseball star and champion. And, wow, there's a lot that goes on here, but we hear the beginning of Vandalay Industries. George is trying to still collect unemployment insurance. Kramer and Newman get involved in shenanigans with people spitting on people, and we see an homage to the film JFK from 1991, that being the Oliver Stone movie. And we'll have it all. So be sure to go ahead to once again return to whatsthedealshow.com, check out our show notes, check out the other business, listen to our back episodes. It's all there. And, if you'd like to get in touch, I don't think we had, you know, after the exposure that Felix got last week, no one was brave enough to send us a tweet again this week. But if they did, how would they do that, Patrick?
If you wanted to tweet us, you could tweet us at WTDShow. Or you can just go to, like, twitter.com/WTDShow. We put all the episodes there, so if you want an easy way to not miss any episodes... that's a good way to do it. Follow us there. We're also on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/whatsthedealshow. We also post all the episodes there, usually, if I remember to do it there. And people tell us they like certain episodes. We can talk to other fans.
Yeah, chat with the fans. They're all the there.
Fans like some things.
So you won't believe this. In an act of serendipity, just today, Felix has tweeted back at us with some information.
Oh.
So he's from, I don't even know how to pronounce this, but he's from Norrköping. I hope that's correct. He says it's kind of like Westeros, which I also don't know what that is. Felix, you're making me feel very deficient in my knowledge. What is Westeros?
Yeah. If you tweet us, we'll talk about your tweets on the show.
Yeah, we'll basically do anything.
Yeah.
But
if you say something on Facebook, you know, we'll say something about the show too.
So, we got a population of just about 90,000 people there.
Oh, small town.
It is, but
small,
you know what?
Northern Europe.
This is a nice town.
Yeah.
Oh, look, they got a lot of hockey players from this town. I bet Felix likes hockey.
Who doesn't? Most of the world. But northern countries love hockey.
Yeah, there's a lot of great Swedish hockey players. There's a lot of great Swedish hockey players on the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel and Henrik Sedin, namely. Justin, you look anxious to wrap this up. Why don't you tell the fine people how they would review this episode?
There's something called iTunes, you know. Maybe you should go over there. And, they have a 5-star rating system. 1-star meaning not so good. 2-star meaning a little better. And you can fill in the rest. But 5 is the optimum. It's the optimum rating.
That is the preferred rating.
Because you could get it confused, because sometimes you think, like, 1-star, that's the top, because it's, like, number one. But no, I should tell you, 5 stars is the best. So if that if you think that's what it deserves, I encourage you to go there and rate it.
If you give us 5 stars, you could be a member of the What's the Deal Plus Club.
We'll follow you on Twitter. Yeah, look at this. You know, in Norrköping, they've got something called Carl Johans Park, and there they plant 25,000 cacti every summer.
Wow.
It's a cactus flower bed. Very dangerous. Because I'm looking at a picture of it, there's not even a fence around that. You could really sting yourself.
That's the difference between the Swedes and the rest of the world. They're ready to, you know, face danger.
They've got a zoo, there's an aquarium, they got snakes, crocodiles, sharks.
Sounds pretty good.
They got it all. No, I'm going to Norrköping as soon as possible. I'd really like that, actually. I'd love to go to Sweden.
You could have a meetup. A What's the Deal meetup.
We should have our first What's the Deal meetup in Sweden. I would go. I mean, you know, if we had the funds, I would absolutely go. I don't want to let people know what the financial status of What's the Deal is, but it's down there. Would you go, Justin? Would you come along for a listener meetup?
Listen. To Norway?
No.
Sweden.
Oh. I go to Sweden, not Norway, though. I hate Norway. I mean, I love all the Nordic countries. Scandinavian countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love them all.
They are very... Patrick, would you go?
Absolutely.
I would love to go to Sweden.
We could have fika?
I know so little about Sweden.
They got fika. That's the thing where you have a coffee break and pastries. That's pretty good. You have the Tubro. That's really good.
What's that?
So you get, like, they take like roe, like fish eggs, and they mash it up and smoke it, and cream it, and then put it in the tube.
Oh, that
and then
stuff.
You put that on wasa crackers or something.
Yeah, I've.
It's delicious.
I'm a little.
They're big on tube foods in Northern Europe.
Are they?
Yeah, they love the tube foods.
I think that's actually. Sweden, I think that's on the flag. I think that's like the crest, the motto. Doesn't tube foods for life.
Yeah, the king of Sweden, I think, endorses a line of tube foods.
Who is the king of Sweden?
I don't know. He's a nice looking guy, though. If you look at a photo of him, he looks nice.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on here anywhere.
I didn't realize this is a podcast for Fromer's Guidebook.
No, his name is... Carl the 16th Gustav of Sweden.
Hey, he looks pretty nice, huh?
I don't know that his Wikipedia page is really doing him, like, justice. He does look very... He looks very stern, I think. Because we're used to seeing Queen Elizabeth, who is both stern but soft. She's sweet and sour.
I think the thing that is famous about the King of Sweden is he likes wearing... Oh, that's a very stern photo of him. On Wikipedia, it's a stern photo. But he's famous for wearing funny hats.
The king is famous for wearing funny hats?
He is, yeah.
No, he's not. I don't think Felix is going to listen to our show anymore, because I feel like he doesn't want us insulting his monarch.
We're not!
I feel like you are.
No, I love him.
Alright, well, we better stop now before Felix turns on us.
Okay.
Alright.
Maybe these are photoshops. But I don't think so. I think it's real.
Why would he wear funny hats?
I don't know.
Can you show me one of these pictures? Are you looking at it right now?
Yeah, I'm going to open it.
Okay, we got 2 seconds here because Justin's not gonna make it to the end of this show.
You guys are gonna love
this. You know, I'm looking out for the listeners. You know, they don't want to listen to this.
This is actually gonna be one of our shortest episodes on record. It's probably only gonna run like maybe an hour and 20 minutes, maybe 25. That is a Photoshop. That is not real, Patrick. No, no, no. Okay, so I don't think he's famous for wearing funny hats because there's no way those pictures are real. We'll put them up on the show notes. You can decide for yourself if they're real or not. I don't think they're real. Felix, you can tweet us and let us know if he's actually famous for wearing funny hats, but I don't think he is. All right, so let's wrap it up there. As always, a hearty thank you from Justin Armstrong.
Hi, friends.
Patrick Armstrong. And myself, Cameron Wong. Thank you very much, and we'll be with you again next week. There's no way those are real.
They're real. Maybe they're photoshopped.
They're definitely photoshopped. I was shocked at how stern this picture was of him. Because the way you were talking about him, I was expecting to see kind of like my grandpa.
Yeah.